This is the Brian Lehrer Show on 93.9 FM and AM 820 and on the web at WNYC.org. I'm Mike Pesca, filling in today for Brian. New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg is in his third term of office. It seems to be going pretty smooth if you look at his public approval ratings. Ed Koch's third term did not go as smooth, but then again, Ed Koch was digging out of a pretty big hole. From 1978 to 1989, he was the city's mayor. And here with us now to talk about this man and his years in shaping the New York we know today is Jonathan Sofer, author of Ed Koch and the Rebuilding of New York City. Jonathan Sofer, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Mike.
So everyone has, every author has a reason, maybe one central question they want answered or one motivation. What got you so fascinated in Ed Koch? What did you want to say or prove about him?
Well, the book isn't just about Ed Koch. It's really a history of New York in the 1970s and 1980s. And I think that it's a period in which and it's about Koch's administration and the policies in reaction to the fiscal crisis that we New Yorkers lived through in those years. And so I think that a lot of the questions that I reached in the book are questions that recur in New York City history and questions that we're facing now, like what do you do when you have serious reductions in government budgets? How do you face austerity? What sort of systemic problems did the city face then and still faces now? And I, you know, New York had very, very serious cuts. At one point, I was cuts were so deep. I think one of the there are a lot of stories like this in the book, but one of the stories that I thought was most interesting was Police Commissioner Bob McGuire, who told me that one night in the middle of the night, he gets a call from his deputy commissioner saying, "There's only one patrol car for all of Queens."
For all of Queens.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a kind of big borough for the last time I checked.
Yeah. So they transferred some over from Manhattan. That's good. But that gives you an idea of how far down the police and city services had been drawn down. Street cleaners were eliminated.
Yeah.
And there were huge cuts in every area. The parks were described to me by the parks commissioner, Gordon Davis, as sandlots when he came in. And so it was a huge hole. And it was a huge hole largely because the federal government did not both Democratic and Republican administrations in the 70s were not suburban oriented, and they were not particularly pro-urban.
Yeah.
And they let the cities kind of go to pot.
Right. You refer to the anti-urban administrations of Ford, Carter, and Reagan. And I guess Reagan gets hit with that, but, you know, it predated him by almost a decade.
That's right.
Now, you know, and some of the other anecdotes, when we talk about the rehabilitation of New York, there's a lot of debate, and Rudy Giuliani gets a lot of credit. People talk about broken windows and flooding the zone with cops. During the Koch administration, one of the things you point out, for instance, just to take one place, Washington Square Park, the reason there were drug dealers on every corner of that park wasn't because of a lack of will. There were no cops to arrest them. There were no prosecutors to bring them up on charges. There was just such a lack of money, so many standard of living issues had to go by the wayside.
Well, actually, the Washington Square case is interesting because there wasn't a lack of cops in Washington Square. I think I point in out in the book that there was actually a cop at one point, a cop in Washington Square for about every 100 square feet. But the ways in which cases were being made against drug dealers, there was a bridge. There was an expansion of civil rights. It's kind of an interesting problem. There was an expansion of civil rights in the 1960s, and that was a good thing. The Supreme Court said you can't arrest they overturned laws that had existed since Elizabethan times. You can't arrest somebody because they appear to be a thief, a prostitute, or a drug dealer. You can't arrest people on the basis of status. You can only arrest people on the basis of lawbreaking. And it took the legal system, I think, a while and it's still trying to figure out what the proper balance is. We've had some issues with massive stop and frisks of basically mostly innocent people in New York City in the last few years. I think you've done shows on that.
Right.
So we're still working out the balance of how to do that. And I don't think they had quite we haven't figured it out yet. They had not figured it out in the Koch administration on that particular issue. But Giuliani did have a much more pro-New York administration in the Clinton administration to work with, and an administration which on that particular issue under both Dinkins and Giuliani provided a lot of money to rehire more cops.
Ed Koch always thought of himself foremost as a pragmatist. What were some of the examples he would cite or you would cite of this pragmatism?
I think Koch built a lot of the basic structures, governmental structures, that made it possible for New York to prosper subsequently, even though, as you point out, in his third term, things were not so great. Of course, not everything was as bad as people say. I mean, my rent back in the Koch administration was about $260 a month in Manhattan. So there were some things to be said about that.
Right. But then again, that's a function of no one wanted to live there, so no one's going to pay a lot. Yeah.
But I think that Koch could be very reactive. I mean, Sonny Bono called him the world's greatest hip shooter, which in some cases, is a lot of what caused a lot of anger against him. But the things that he did strategically really helped rebuild the city. The first thing he did was he went to his former colleagues in Congress. And he had built up a lot of friendships and relationships in Congress.
And he worked hard at it. I mean, when he got to Congress as a congressman from the East Village, you point out they stuck him on the, like, Aeronautics and Rocketry Committee, like the worst thing
yeah.
for a guy from the Village.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And I think he said that he didn't think that we should fund any manned space flight until the last rat had been eradicated from the last tenement in Harlem. But first of all, he went and got a long-term loan guarantee from the federal government. And this was not going to rebuild the city, but it put the city on the road to being able to rebuild itself. And the Carter administration, when he started out, said, this is impossible. You'll never get this through Congress. And most people at the time believed it was impossible, and he made it happen. Those loan guarantees enabled the city to repair its finances, to do a limited amount of capital spending, but never enough. And this gets back to the austerity question. When you don't have enough of a capital budget for 10 years and nothing gets fixed, it becomes more expensive to repair it in the end. So he took that loan guarantee program. He took the city budget. He balanced the city budget a year before the state mandated financial plan required him to. That was really good for the city's credit.
Right.
And that brought the city back into the capital markets. Now, the second strategic decision that he made, once the city was able to borrow money from the private sector again, instead of just reducing the city's debt, or not doing anything, he borrowed money, and he not only worked on rebuilding the city's infrastructure, but he worked on rebuilding the huge areas of the city that had burned down during the 1970s.
What aspects of his persona, what we think of him, how am I doing, not being afraid to jab a finger in someone's face and calling them out, what aspects of his persona helped him achieve his policy goals, and what were just the fact that he was, you know, some flamboyant character type guy?
Well, you know, I think that a lot of people, because of his brash persona, really saw him as many people saw him as someone who was really committed with his entire body and soul to working for the city. That was certainly not a unanimous feeling, and some of the things that he said were very divisive, you know, that the UN was a cesspool, there were many, you know, the Jews would have to be crazy to vote for Jesse Jackson. I mean, these were...
Yeah. Anyone he didn't like was a wacko and tone deaf on things like divesting in apartheid and leading with his mouth sometimes and not his brain.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting because there are sort of two sides. There's the pragmatic, compromising Ed Koch who gets Republicans in Congress to vote for aid to New York City, who brings... You know, senators from South Dakota who've never been to New York before to come and see what the city is like, and then there's the Koch who tends to divide the world into good and bad and go attacking the bad. I mean, Ed has a sense that what he believes is just. And he has a certain certainty about that, and that leads to his being tenacious, which can be very productive, but it can also be divisive.
I think in general, perhaps to be overly reductive, you feel that Ed Koch doesn't get the credit he deserves, and is part of that because the real evidence of the recovery took a while to kick in. After he left office, it's not like things were great overnight.
No, they were terrible. There was a crack epidemic. Things got AIDS. Things got worse before they got better.
That's right.
But the housing program was a 10-year housing program that didn't start building large amounts of housing until his last 2 years in office, because it took so long. It worked instead of Robert Moses, like, just knocking stuff down. It worked through rehabilitating existing housing and doing it in a decentralized way through community groups. This takes a tremendous amount of organization and setup. And so this is something that he set up that Mayor Bloomberg just renewed a very similar housing program a couple of months ago. So it's those kinds of structures, the budget structures. He didn't actually change the entire budgeting structure of the city. And indeed, there's still a lot wrong with the independence of agencies and the lack of centralized control over the budget, I think.
We do have to wrap.
Okay.
It's a big book. And I just wanted to mention that Bobby from the East Village says the pooper scooper law was his greatest achievement. Jonathan Sofer is the author of Ed Koch and the Rebuilding of New York City. Thanks so much for spending some time on this major book and coming in with us.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike.
You're welcome. Back in a moment.